Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Welcome, one and all. Yes. Pure Dog Talk and Tony Hoover Mendenhall are happy to have you join us doing the litter evaluation workshop designed for the young people in our sport, but clearly participating with other folks as well. And we have a couple puppies that we're going to look at, but I think the important thing to remember is that when we're looking at puppies, this is your hopes and your dreams. This is the mystery and the joy that keeps us going in this sport, is all wrapped up in these babies. And I think that's something that's really important to remember. And every time you have a new litter, it's your chance to get it right. Every time. And every time, no matter how close you are, it's never perfect. And so you try again. And so these puppies represent everything that's good in purebred dogs. And picking the right puppy, selecting the right one from the litter, is a huge part of your recipe for success or failure as a breeder. And knowing which one to keep, which one to put in which home, your pet home is not going to want that high drive dog. And your top show home is definitely not going to want that mushy mellow that's over here lying in the corner. And when you've watched and evaluated puppies from kind of the same family of dogs for an extended period of time, that's really your best teaching tool. But you can start learning now to evaluate structure, what structure is, where to look for it, evaluate temperament, and to apply your breed standard to your dogs very specifically. And that will make your learning curve shorter in the future when you're looking at a new litter of puppies. It's not a bad thing to start learning how to evaluate puppies using ones that you're not actually attached to. Right? Like, I don't love this puppy like Tony loves this puppy. I mean, I love this puppy because it's cute. Oh! Okay? But I'm not attached to this. I haven't named it. It's not my best friend, Dot. And when we're breeders, it's a real temptation to say, oh, I like the spots on this one. And I remember one of the very first litters of wire hair pointers I had, there was a boy puppy in that litter that had a perfect heart shape on his side. And by God, that was going to be my puppy until I had one of my early mentors come and evaluate the litter. And she's like, yeah, no, it's not. So I think it's really important that we be able to set aside the emotional piece and just look objectively and evaluate the puppies based on total structure. And I tell people all the time when I do litter evaluations, I say, I can't tell you this is going to be a best on show dog or not. I have no idea. There's too many parts that go into that. I can tell you what the structure is and isn't. And I can tell you what the temperament is and isn't. But I can't tell you what it's going to do from there. And I personally am of the opinion anybody thinks they can is crazy. I can't even do it in my own breed, never mind one I don't know much about. But I know enough about structure that we can look at this and I can help you evaluate based on your standard. And I think it's super important. Responsible preservation breeders, our job is to be ruthless. When we make our decisions about what goes into a breeding program, that is critical to the future of your breed, never mind just your own breeding program. And as darling as this puppy is, if it's not the one that's going to go into the breeding program and improve the breed as a whole, then it should get to be a lovely pet. And that is a wonderful thing and should never be denigrated. But we have to be super careful about what we want to carry forward. So, making these kind of tough choices that we're talking about, that's what elevates the master breeder above everybody else that's trying really hard and maybe not getting as far. What we're going to try and do tonight. So the three topics we're going to talk about tonight, we're going to talk about structure, basic structure, anatomy. We're going to talk about temperament, some of the things that we can test on that. And then we're going to take breed standards and apply them to these two breeds. We've got
a wire dachshund, and we have a smooth fox terrier. So just about as diametrically opposed as you can get for structure that we'll be able to look at and apply those standards in your packet of information. Our illustrated standards for both breeds, so that you'll be able to look at what we're looking at. So structure is how the bones fit together. And I like to, when I'm evaluating puppies, by the way, my hand is under this puppy's chin, okay? We're not strangling, this is jaw bones and chin. So when I pick a puppy up, I wanna see how its legs come down, gently lift by the chin and the jawbone and the little bottom parts, very gently, so that we're not hurting the puppy. But this lets me see how these puppy's legs are gonna come down. It's a whole lot easier to do this with this puppy than it was with the Black Russian Terriers I looked at yesterday. That weighed 25 pounds in 8 weeks. So we're gonna look at basic bone structure. The front assembly, how these bones go together, shoulder bone, upper arm, point of the hip, point of the stifle, point of the hock. These angles that are described by those points of structure on the dog. Here, point of the shoulder, point of the shoulder to the elbow. In each breed has, in the standard, a very specific description of how those bones should fit together to make the ideal dog. And you need to know what that description is when you're looking at your breed and evaluating it. And so you can look at these little guys and you can see where these shoulders fit. If the shoulder fits high up in the neck, it's going to make your neck look shorter. If the shoulder is laid back, which is what we talk about, they say shoulder layback. What does that actually mean? It means this part right here is back, and it's going to make an angle that matches the back of the elbow and the back of that shoulder blade should actually be at the same place in most breeds. Not every breed, but that's something that you're looking for, is that angle. And the length of these bones, again, in most cases, should be equal to make a balanced angle. And so knowing what your standard says about how these bones fit together is super important. If you look at that dachshund standard, look at how far laid back. Look at that shoulder and hips. That back of that shoulder blade and that elbow are supposed to be at the same place on the dog's body. And in this case, this puppy's shoulder is a little far forward from that. Okay, here's the back of the elbow, here's the back of the shoulder blade. So that's something that is part of the structure that we're talking about. Same thing applies for the rear angulation. So you're gonna go from point of the hip here, point of the stifle here, to the point of the hock. Okay, so these three places that I have my fingers, that makes the angulation in the rear. Does that match the diagram? In this case, maybe this rear is coming a little further back than what they're describing, but no, actually
better
not.
Better than the shoulder, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the problem then comes to be balance. We understand balance? So if we have a mismatch in the angles, in other words, this angle is more open than this angle, that's going to affect the balance of the dog overall and how we picture it, how it moves, and all the rest of it. So a balance, even if both are too much or not enough or what have you, having them be the same is better than having them be different. Okay, that mismatch of angles is something that I always am going to look for in terms of this one is more open than this one. That tells me there's not quite as much balance here in the angulation as I'd like to see. That's just something that I look for. Yes?
Which creates a...
Right, how they move, the feet don't match, you know, all of that stuff. You'll see a dog that's very common in sporting dogs. We see dogs that have a lot of rear angle, these big sweeping Irish setter. Okay, I'm picking on Irish setter, sorry guys. Big sweeping rear end, and then this front, and they make this big, beautiful, elegant look to this sloping top line. Well, unfortunately, too many of the dogs achieve that look by making a front that has no angle. So this front angulation is straight up and down, and this rear angulation is this giant swoop. And so those dogs either move sideways, or they flail their front, or they do all kinds of horrible things because those things don't match. So balance. When we look at our dogs, there's very few dogs. I mean, dachshunds actually are amongst the ones that get to be more exaggerated and more extreme. But truly and honestly, balance is 90% of what we want to see in most breeds. and making those things, those parts mesh smoothly. And so when I evaluate a litter of puppies, particularly, again, a breed I don't know, that's something I'm going to gravitate to, is the balance. When you're evaluating your own litter of puppies, it's easy to get sucked in by adorableness and not to actually stand here and look at the balance of the dog. A lot of people ask why 8 weeks. 8 weeks is sort of a given institutionalized age. Yes, and the idea is that the common wisdom is that at 8 weeks, a dog is going to look as close to what it will look like at its adult age. That's the age. Now, I think personally, based on what I've experienced, that varies by breed, and it varies even within breeds. Some wire hair pointers, my dogs, I look at them at 6 weeks and I look at them at 8 weeks. If they look the same both times, holla! If they don't, then I'm going to pay attention to what changed. Clumber Spaniels, some of the other breeds I've evaluated, they are more true at 9 weeks. And so it just really depends, and that comes with really institutional knowledge within your breed and within your family of dogs. But we use 8 weeks as a pretty standardized time to look at what you see today is pretty much what you're going to get. And I hear people say, oh, that shoulder thing will fix, or this rear thing, or that top line. Nope. You can dream, people. And sometimes by happy accident, things do improve, or by sad accident, they get worse. But legitimately and realistically, be honest. Be honest with yourself. Be honest with your breeding program. Be honest with your breed. If that dog has a giant humpy top line, big straight shoulders, and bright yellow eyes, it's not going to get better no matter how much you love it. Any of that stuff. Not going to get better. So that's a thing to know. 8 weeks is the point at which we look at these. And it's tougher, like for you guys, for the kids, for the young people, because you get attached to Junior, or you get attached to Fluffy, or, you know, whatever it is. I want that one! Well! And that emotional piece is tough when you're a little kid. And so I think for a lot of our juniors, our young people, this is a hard exercise to learn. And so I encourage practicing it early. So the other thing that will change, and one of the reasons I say I really will not ever, when I'm doing an evaluation, make a guarantee about what will finish, what will be a special, what will be a whatever, because so much of what makes a show dog, big chunk of its structure, big chunk of its presentation, big chunk of its condition, but a whole lot of it is mind. How their temperament, their carriage that's affected by their temperament, all of those things go into what is the difference between a nice dog, a good dog, and a great dog. It's up here. And a lot of that, you can get an idea, and we'll talk about that in a minute in the temperament testing, but legitimately it's hard to tell because so much of that is also environmental. How we raise our puppies has a great deal to do with how they grow up as adults. So those are some of the unknowable things. What you can know, this, this, and this, in terms of how the bones fit together. What you can't know is the intangible pieces, the pieces, how they're raised, what tiny little thing that happens in the wrong fear period, and oh my God, the end of the world has come, and, you know, those sorts of things we can't know. So we can just look at what we have here. So then I'm going to swap puppies for a minute. So temperament testing is the next thing that is a big chunk of what we're looking at. And we're going to get to see here the difference in temperament just between breeds. There's a lovely, mushy wire dachshund puppy, and here is a lovely, wild little smooth fox terrier puppy. And look at his little tail. Whee! And so when you're selecting a breed, it's important to keep these kinds of things in mind because this is who these guys are. They're not cute and cuddly. They're wild creatures, and they run amok, and they wiggle their tails, and they get into trouble. So there's a lot of different temperament tests out there. I have used the Volhard test and had some good success with that. But you can actually Google it. It's online. The V-O-L-H-A-R-D, Volhard, was developed actually by people doing temperament testing for working breeds. And I have found it to be very, very successful for my breed because a lot of what I'm testing for is performance dogs. And so this may not be the proper test for a Dandy Denmont. And yes. I find it is to be very, very useful for anybody that's going to go into performance. And it's going to talk to you about biddability, willingness to follow, confidence, willingness to chase something. You turn a puppy over on its back. We're going to see how this goes. And we do this very specifically and very carefully. And the Volhard test will actually grade 1 through 5 how the puppy reacts, and it will tell you for all of the tests that you do what type of temperament is liable to develop from these particular reactions. Correct. It absolutely. So this is an absolute perfect testing situation for this puppy for the Vole Hard Test. They ask you to hold it up off the ground. What do its legs do? What do its ears do? What does its face do? This puppy is doing wonderfully. This puppy is going to score very, very well in terms of a performance perspective. It's not showing fear. It's not showing resistance. It's not showing any aggression. I have had puppies that when you turn them over like this at this age and do like this, a little bit of looking away, so that's something that will lower that score, but not bad. No Klingon, no straight up in the air, very relaxed and chill. I've had dogs bite me in the face when I did this at 8 weeks old. So, and that gives you a real different score. And it isn't to say that one puppy is better than another. It is to say, what is an appropriate placement? If you have a high drive, high energy, high confidence, low willingness to follow, low biddability dog, this is not something you should send to a home with seniors, small children. Those decisions are so critical to having the dog and the owner and the family live and work well together. And so doing temperament testing with your puppies, in my opinion, is an essential piece of making a successful placement, not only for yourself, but for your puppy people. And so you've been watching and you've been evaluating and you've been doing all of those things with these puppies, but you get someone else to come in and do all of those things. You can see a lot of different stuff than what you might have expected. Okay. So all of the temperament testing, the other thing, and we may a little bit later on video be able to do this. Tony has brought rabbits, frozen dead rabbits for her dachshunds to chase as an instinct test. Now, I can't be making too many faces because I frequently do this with frozen pigeons for the pointing breeds. So, okay? Those of us who work with breeds who are designed to function and work, and we actually are still involved with that part of it, we're going to want to know what their natural reaction is to their preferred prey that they will hunt, or sheep that they will herd, or whatever it is. If that's part of your testing program, then you should be including that as well as the temperament test. This video is actually useful for this. People a lot of times are amazed when I come to do litter evaluations that I get their puppies to hold still for pictures. And this is a wonderful tool taught to me many years ago by an old mentor. And it's just basically giving the puppy an idea that they need to be still. And then you kind of take the puppy and you just, you know, shaking a puppy. We're not doing shaken puppy syndrome, but you're just putting them a little off balance. And then when you put them down, they're like, oh, thank God, solid ground. And their little feet stay still. Maybe not for an extended period, but at least long enough to get a picture. So that's something, again, taking photos I find to be so useful when I'm evaluating litters. And even when I'm evaluating the litter and I'm touching the puppy and I've got it stacked up on the table, I ask people to take a photo and then I go back and I review the photos. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times what I see in the photo doesn't match what I felt, and I want to go back and see what I missed. And a lot of times it'll confirm what I felt and be like, yep, there's that straight shoulder I was talking about. But taking photos really adds objectivity, takes away any subjectivity. And you can just look at those pictures. And I have for years taken photos, 8 week photos, 6 and 8 week photos of my litters, and then compared them to what the adult dog looked like and compared them side by side. And when I go back to that 8 week photo, invariably, the piece that I just am like, where in the world did that bitch get those straight pasterns? Well, there it was in that photo that I didn't notice and I didn't pay close enough attention to. So photos really are critical, but they have to be good photos. They have to be proper photos. You don't want your smooth fox terrier's nose stretched all the way out here with a piece of bait. You want to have it set, neck and shoulder set, just as if you were looking at a picture of the puppy in the standard. This is what the dog's going to look like in the ring. Let's stack it up and make it look like that. And there's lots and lots of techniques. Everybody has a favorite. Some people use the stacking blocks. Some people put a thing of yogurt in their face. I'm like, I can't see its head. So this is my method. I found it to be relatively successful. Find your method and what works. But just the important piece being, get a good photo of your puppy at whatever your preferred evaluation age is so that you can really look at what you're trying to see on the structure. So again, your little shoulders. Those are nice shoulders.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So the other thing that you're going to want to look at that is part of the structure when you're evaluating the puppy, and we'll just use this one because we've got her up here. Part of structure is head structure. Head, eye, ear, neck into shoulder, all of that. But heads, because they are so specific, you should be able to look at the head of a Smooth Fox Terrier and know it is a Smooth Fox Terrier, not anything else. You should be able to look at the head of a wire dachshund and know that it is a wire dachshund and not anything else. So head proportions, head planes, head properties are critical when you're making your evaluation. And it's tough sometimes with puppies, unless you really know the breed, to say, okay, well, this head will change. And in some cases, heads will change. Certain breeds, Clumber Spaniels, the head grows and changes dramatically. And so knowing that, again, part of your breed-specific part. But the Smooth Fox Terrier heads are huge. In your standard that's in your thing, there's like 3 pages. 3 pages on the illustrated standard of what the proper Smooth Fox Terrier head is. So know what the standard is for your breed. Know what the proper head properties are and how to identify them. Look at the ear set. Look at the eye shape. Look at the proportion of muzzle to skull. Those things won't change.
This breed just gets a little more muzzle fill like most dogs.
Right. So maturity, exactly. But the basic properties and proportions aren't going to change. And that, I think, is true basically across breeds. Okay, so that's temperament testing and bouncing back to structure. And now we're going to go to applying the standard. And this is what, again, Sheila was nice enough to send the entire illustrated standard for the Smooth Fox Terrier, which is just fabulous. I wish every breed had these, because it is such a great learning tool. It shows you all those angles we were talking about. When you want to look at your front, you want to look at your rear, and you want to look at your head planes, and you want to look at the length of muzzle and skull and ear placement and eye shape, it tells you exactly what it should be. Yes.
So if I'm understanding what I'm seeing here,
uh-huh,
and what I think I'm seeing with baby,
uh-huh,
baby's a little bit tall rather than square. Is that correct or no?
Sheila, would you like to answer that?
They judge the square by the image actually of the head, the tail, or also the length of back to the leg. And at her age, she's actually pretty square.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So a square is tough.
Okay.
You measure from here to here. And I can't let go of her to do this. Right. Sheila, maybe you could come and kind of show.
You know, they want the distance from here to here basically to be the same as here to here.
Oh.
And then they want here. They measure them from here to there.
To the point of the hip, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And so that should fit
picture
in a box, right?
Pretty
basically
much. Basically. Yeah.
So this one right now maybe is a little up on leg versus depth of body.
Yeah.
Okay, so that I would say your observation.
She's a little leggy.
Right. So if the length of leg to the depth of body should be equal, then she's a little up on leg.
But she has a lovely short back.
Yes, she does have a very short back. Hooey! And so one of the things that I always love in the Fox Terrier standard is that it describes a short back dog standing over a lot of ground.
Yes.
Is that correct? And I think that that's what you see here. This is the short back, and it covers a lot of ground. I mean, that's a pretty picture. So I think the other thing to keep in mind when we're evaluating breeds, not only know your standard, and when I say know your standard, I don't mean somebody read you parts of it. I mean you have read it. You have memorized it. You can quote it verbatim. That is what I mean by read the standard. But the other part of it is to, a lot of people can do rote memorization and still not understand the concept. You have to know what they call the hallmark of the breed. Okay, so this is one of my favorite quotes. It's kind of a Bill Shelton or some of these people that talk that are really a lot smarter than me. But they talk about the hallmark of the breed. What is the hallmark of your breed? What says this is a Smooth Fox Terrier, not a Wire Fox Terrier, not a Rat Terrier? What is it about a Smooth Fox Terrier? What is the hallmark of the breed, Sheila? Well,
basically, there's the square. Is
this a big piece of it. And the head, yeah?
And the head and the fact that they're supposed to have a very short back.
Right.
And
for me,
cat feet. I have a perfect, her nails are long, but she's going to have wonderful feet.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them you'll look at and they've got really sweet.
Right. So when I think of a Smooth Fox Terrier, what I think of is that short back standing over a lot of ground. That, to me, kind of is the one thing that says Smooth Fox Terrier to me.
Yeah.
dachshund, what would you say, Tony? What would be a hallmark of the dachshund breed?
Long, low, level, big, oval keel.
Right, so the
chest.
Right, okay, so let's do this. Let's swap again because this is actually a wonderful demonstration. The dachshund keel, dachshunds, basset hounds, about it, really, that have the type of keel that they're talking about. And so, Tony, maybe you can come here and give us a good demonstration. Reach over the puppy and show us what is specifically the keel.
So for me, keel, what I was taught, top of breastbone, keel should come all the way back to just behind the last rib. So her keel sits there.
And would you feel that was short, adequate?
That's a little short for the breed, but better than most.
Okay. So
you would like it back.
Right. You want it back to the middle of the dog almost.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the keel, this bony carapace piece underneath, right? Part of what their job description, they got to ground. This is part of what keeps them, all their internal organs safe and secure. So again, the hallmark of the breed, in a dachshund is the keel, would you say?
Yep.
So that's something that you really...
The three L's.
Yep,
yeah.
Long,
low, level. Absolutely. And that's what I learned in dachshunds as well. But that keel is what really, really sets them apart as a breed. And if they don't have that, they don't have the hallmark
and
of the breed.
See it. The part of that keel with them is the forechest.
Yeah, that's and there's a significant posternum here. You guys know what a posternum is. The posternum is that pointy part that comes out in front of the shoulder blades. So here's the front of the shoulder, and here's the front of the posternum. So this dog has a pretty significant posternum. And that's something that's an important part of your keel. You then want to see it carried back maybe a little bit further, but we like the pronounced posternum on this puppy. Okay, so know the hallmark of your breed and know what you're getting into with that. Okay, questions?
I have a question.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
What would be the, in your breed, the smooth, what's the thing that you look at the most when you're evaluating for yourself and just showing in the standard?
For myself, I think this sounds a little strange. Not really. I try to breed. My dogs are more correct in size than a lot of what we see out there in the ring.
Okay.
There is no height DQ, but the standard is very specific about what the height should be. I mean, it's clearly specific. I try to breed what, for my own interpretation of the standard, which is not a long-necked, elegant dog, which a lot of what we see winning is that.
Okay, so size is going to be something that you're kind of focused, size and shoulders. Okay, and I think this is an important kind of a point to make here. When you breed your litter and you have your puppy buyers and you've got what you want to keep and you've got some show homes and you've got some pet homes and somebody says, well, I want the pick puppy. Whose idea of the pick puppy? Because in my breeding program, I need to fix X. Your breeding program, you might need to fix Y. In which case, the pick puppy for me is definitely not the pick puppy for you, okay? And so it is important when you're making breeding decisions, when you're looking long-term, you're not just breeding to whatever walked by. You are breeding to a plan. You are breeding 3-5 generations down the road. I'm going to breed this to this so that then I can breed that to that so that I can then breed back and bring in some other, okay? That's the concept of a good preservation breeder. Well, when you're doing that, you're doing it for a specific purpose. I want to make better shoulders. I want to improve my coat quality. I want to keep the look that I have, and I would like to soften some of the edges of the tail. Whatever it is, okay, you have to have priorities to guide your breeding program other than, oh, hey, look, I'm going to breed to this dog. It's got 28 million best in shows. Okay, that's not your best breeding plan. And so I think that that evaluation of the puppies plays into this entire process that you have done this breeding to get a specific thing. What is the thing that you wanted from this particular breeding? What did this stud dog bring you to this bitch that's what you want to carry forward for your next generation? Keep that one. And if none of them have that thing, don't keep any of them. Thank you, one and all, for joining us.
Baby's going to
sleep. Hopefully, yes. I've apparently managed to bore the baby, so hopefully I haven't bored all the rest of you to tears. And so with that, I will bid you a fond good evening.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.